Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Steve Cadigan is a top talent strategist and leadership expert. He was the first chief human resource officer at LinkedIn. His newest book is Workquake. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Great to be here, George. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
You know, I feel really fortunate, George, that I discovered about a year or two out of school that everything I loved about competition and sport and how people respond in certain environments, they actually had a profession for, and they call it human resources. And I stumbled onto it in a rotation program, my first job out of college, and found that everything I love about how observing how people handle different environments, different situations, different cultures, and what brings out the best in teams and groups and individuals is a domain that I just really, really love. And so everything that I loved about, you know, watching competition and competing as an athlete has been able to be something that I've been able to morph into the world of work. And so that's allowed me to, and the cool thing about picking that profession or that profession picking me is that I can do it in any industry in every country of the world. And I've had a chance to work in six different industries, three different countries, US, Singapore, and Canada. And today, my biggest client, even though I live in the States on the West Coast, is Lisbon, Portugal. So that's, you know, a confluence of really cool things that's allowed me to really immerse myself into, you know, a universe that for, you know, in my good fortune, is a place that a lot of people are really challenged with right now, and that's the world of work. You know, never been more unpredictable, never been more uncertain, and that's the place I find myself in. So just a little bit of background.
Yeah, thank you. I think that that's great. My wife works in human resources, and I don't know that she and I have ever talked about it in the context of sort of applying a lot of the lessons of competitive athletics to it. But as you say it and lay it out that way, it certainly makes all the sense in the world. So I appreciate that. And I think it's so germane to our world today of everything you just talked about. And mm-hmm. I don't know how many people wake up when they're 5 years old and end up doing what they thought that they would do. Maybe there's some out there, but most of us are just sort of stumbling around. So you figured out a couple of years after college, and now you are more than a couple of years out of college. You've enjoyed a lot of success, and you've certainly also discovered and pursued other lines of interest, yet you're still interested in the thing that you found 2 years after. So how do you coach people to do what you did?
Gosh, you know, I think when I look at my journey, I think I went through an experience very young when my family moved from the US to South Africa when I was two, and we moved back. We were actually kicked out of South Africa when I was seven. And I faced a real steep requirement to adapt. I was being teased in school because I had a really strong South African accent, and kids can be rough on someone who's different. And when you become a teenager, you want to be different. But when you're, you know, 7 years old, you want to be just like everybody else. And I think that early experience of building a desire to adapt and understand that there's different environments sort of got into my veins. And I think it built in me a high degree of empathy, I think, for seeing the world from other people's perspectives. And that's served me really well. So this world of talent, and you know this because you probably talk about it with your spouse, it's a huge domain, from recruiting to onboarding to coaching to diversity to analytics to compensation to benefits to, you know, immigration and relocation, org design. Wellness, mental wellness has come big. You know, wellness before the pandemic was the fitness center, and now it's like mental wellness is like a big, big deal. Diversity, you know, there's a whole, you know, big dialogue about that in the States right now around where that sits and what's fair and what's not fair. So that's a big playing field, if you will, you know? And so my coaching, I coach some HR executives today on the side, is sort of like find your lane that you really like playing in and be really master it, and then be really good at a couple other things. But in a field with like 35, 40 disciplines, you're not going to be great at everything. And then find organizations that want and need what you have, right? So I tend to be someone that operates really well in crazy and in environments where there's not a lot of trust, and bringing trust in. That's what I've learned about myself. And so when I'm coaching other people, it's like, becoming self-aware is the most powerful gift that you can have about yourself and your journey. It's like, know what you're good at, know what environments really bring out the best in you, and know which environments bring out the worst in you. And I've seen this play out so many times, George, where we've had a superstar, they leave and they fall down. Like it's a belly flop, you know, or someone who was not doing well in another organization comes into ours and finds out, hey, whether it's the culture, the leadership style, whether it's the, you know, confluence of how their skills can be applied, they've gone from feeling like they're a failure to being a superstar. And so you're trying to be mindful of that. Not every environment is going to be ideal for you, right?
So much good stuff there. It sounds like you need to run for president or governor if you're liking chaos and you want to bring trust back. I feel like those are the things that we need.
Yeah, no doubt, right? No doubt. I mean, think about it. You know, I talk to executives all day right now, these days, George, and the first question I ask is like, so what's top of mind for you? What's going on? They're like, well, I'm worried about turnover. I'm worried about people leaving my company. I'm worried about the need for new skills has been faster, and I need newer skills sooner than ever before. I'm worried about the pajama revolution of all these people that learned that they can, you know, operate just as well from home as they can in the office. And I've got all this land that I've purchased in these office buildings that I need to have filled. I'm worried about, you know, the proliferation of new career paths and career choices for people. We've got more new industries being born today than any time in history. And with a new industry, whether it's cryptocurrency, whether it's driverless cars, comes new career choices, you know? And so being a leader is really hard. Yeah. So I think your point's well taken, you know, tolerance of ambiguity, tolerance of, okay, I'm not going to be able to control the variables as much as I maybe did or wanted to in the past, is a big challenge for lots of us today, for sure.
Yeah, it'd be weird if it wasn't. That conversation that you had, I don't know if it was an amalgamation of many or one, but those are big questions to answer for any one person. And if you're the leader, you're the person in charge, you need to be able to answer those. And so that's true if you're the CHRO or the CEO of a big company, but that's also the role that we're playing for ourselves. If right. I'm 18 years old and I'm trying to figure out, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to study this. I'm not going to study this. Or I'm 22. Am I going to follow my career path or find something else to do? What's my next best move?
Right. Well, I'll tell you
There's a question in there somewhere.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'll take where you're going and I'll extend it out. I spend a lot of time talking on campuses around the world to students and professors, right? Who are equally sort of like wondering what's the future hold for me. And I finally got my hands on some data recently, which is really telling. More students are changing their majors than at any time in history. In fact, if we looked at pre-pandemic, you know, and this is a hard number to sort of nail down because a lot of colleges don't report this, but the median number of times someone would switch a majors was about 1.2 to 1.5 pre-pandemic. Today it's 2.2 to 2.5.
Wow.
And you think, you know, so the knee jerk is, oh, you know, is there some sort of generational decision-making issue going on here? I don't think that's the case. I think it is, there are so many new choices that it's causing confusion around what should I ground myself in to best prepare me for this future, right? And adding on to that, the need for constant upskilling at a degree we've never seen before. So, and that's, you know, as a parent, am I happy my kids have lots of choices? Yes. You know, I've three teenage boys a few years ago, was pretty certain going to be a YouTube influencer dad for sure. All right. And if you just think about that answer, that was not something that was available in my generation. That doesn't have an employer. It's me creating content that if others value, I become valuable. And that's a pathway that's available. You know, most of us have taken an Uber or do take Ubers or Lyfts pretty frequently, or in Europe, we call it, you know, Cabify is a big player. And I love having the conversation with the driver, like, hey, what, you know, tell me your story. Like, how is it? What do you do? Like, whether I'm a grandparent trying to raise funds for my grandchild's college, or whether I'm just trying to make a few extra bucks because I'm between roles, or I just like not having a boss, you know, that domain of choice is really, really causing a lot of, you know, career paralysis for people today.
Domain of choice is a great term.
Yeah.
All right. So what should I ground myself in? What does that mean?
What do you mean? Give you some more context.
That's where I choose to find my time, what I choose to focus on, what I value, yeah, what I'm going to do, all those things.
Okay. Here's what I would say, and how I think about this moment right now. The biggest strength that I think we can bring to ourselves is the capacity to learn new things quickly. If we're chasing some hot new shiny skill, like let's just take STEM right now. When Jensen Huang, the CEO of the shiny, you know, NVIDIA semiconductor company, said last year on a stage, hey, you know, last 5 years it was all about STEM. Right now it's all about communicating effectively, because I can now prompt AI to deliver a lot of what STEM education was delivering, you know. Am I saying don't pursue STEM? Not at all. But I'm saying, like, that's how quickly the shift of, oh, I should focus on this to become relevant for the future is happening. And so if you build the confidence and ground yourself in, I'm confident I can learn new, whatever that is, I've got the capacity to learn new things, that is going to serve you so well. And it almost leads down this interesting path of the specialist used to be the really valuable objective, because the deeper my domain expertise, the more valuable I am. And now it's almost the generalist, and the someone who can learn quickly and adapt makes my company, organization, team more adaptable. That's more valuable in a world that's changing quickly. And that's just fundamentally really unsatisfying for a lot of people who were told the former, you know, like become a deep expert. And now it's like, yeah, but that's not really that valuable to us, because we need you to learn this over here, you know?
Yeah, it's fascinating. We are going through, as we've always been going through, change. And there's this interesting conversation about, well, this person's not an expert. They shouldn't be talking about this subject or whatever it might be. And you, one of the things I was curious about is you obviously were the chief human resources officer for LinkedIn, and you're an expert in the space, and that's an incredible thing. But how do you then parse out your time between really going deep to become a specialist versus staying a generalist? And then how do I rise the ranks to become the chief of whatever it is versus the contributor? So being able to learn new things as a skill, not being afraid to do that. What's the friction there? Is it fear? Is it I'm tired and I don't want to learn? A little bit of everything.
Yeah, all of the above. I mean, that's certainly, we're in a make the sausage moment right now, where there's not a lot of benchmarks for this moment in time, where we have all this confluence of things happening around us. And I mean, we've barely dipped our toe into talking about artificial intelligence. What I would say is, if I'm looking to help someone today, it's I want to raise your confidence in your viability in the future. And how can I help you build your own confidence? And that is by giving you a higher degree of confidence, and experimentation is the pathway. Like, we're going to have to try lots of new stuff. So I want to work in an environment where experimenting's okay. A lot of companies I go to say, oh yeah, we're all about fail first. I'm like, really? Because when I talk to your people, they're all like, well, you go first and see what happens to you when you fail first. We haven't built those cultures because we've built an environment of business where it's reliable, predictable, consistent outcomes means that's what I want to achieve. And what's really cool today, George, is we're starting to see more and more companies doing really well with a demographic that's not filled with lots of long tenured employees. So if we take the most innovative, creative companies and they're probably over benchmark, but let's just take Google, Apple, maybe Uber, Facebook, Airbnb, Microsoft. Their median tenure, all of them, is hovering around 4 years. Now, are they crushing? Are they highly valued, innovative, creative? Yes. And one could almost argue, and throw Tesla in there too, as much as that's an over benchmark company. But here you've got it. And what I love about talking about Tesla is they have completely revolutionized an industry against people who've been doing it for 100 years. And today, it's because they're not entrenched in 100 years of policy and process that they're able to see different possible outcomes. So the fact that you're not a deep domain expert, but you're capable of learning new things and solving problems in different environments is kind of like a super skill today, you know? And you could argue the reason why all those companies that I listed did so well during the pandemic was because they were built for crazy. They're built for, we're going to adapt. We're going to move quickly. We're not going to try to make the world bend to our will, you know? And that's not a ding at all these legacy companies. It's just they were built for a different solve. And in a world where things are changing quicker, it turns out new people with new ideas and new ways of solving problems is an asset. And people have been doing the same thing for a long time that you built to achieve is actually a liability, you know? And that's why a lot of European companies that I work with today are struggling, because the entire legal infrastructure was built to protect the employees from not being let go. And these companies are like, man, we need to upskill. These people are looking at the calendar when they're going to retire and they don't want to learn new stuff. That's a real challenge, you know? And I think that's an advantage that, you know, the way the labor market is designed in the States has, which is there's low friction to change things out. And that's why we're seeing really weird stuff play out in companies today, where we're going to let some people go, but we're also going to hire a ton. It used to be, we're going to let some people go, freeze recruiting, you know, put the brakes on, let's, you know, manage you know, expenses. And I was like, no, I need new skills. I need new people. And I'm going to trade some of these folks out for a different kind of skill set. And that sort of plays in the face of longevity and loyalty and all these, you know, increasingly outdated notions that we're still living with to a certain extent.
A lot of really good stuff there too as well, Steve. You're doing a really awesome job so far. Thank you. Scrappiness, grit, and the beginner's mentality. Those are career traits. Those are skills that we must have, or at least it benefits us to foster those moving forward, which I think is probably pretty obvious that I just said that, but. And then I wrote down rent control, but for employees, that's what European companies are kind of struggling with. You can't get rid of people. And so therefore, that's interesting. You'd be forced to try and develop these people that you're, for lack of a better term, stuck with. And then the idea that loyalty is, that's a really tricky one.
Yeah. And, you know, when I present a lot of the stats to executives today, George, it's really a fun conversation. I'll say, what's your biggest challenge? I'll say, well, people, Steve, they're just not staying, you know, as long as they used to. And I said, and I hear you. And I said, not only are people leaving, but people are changing careers faster than any time in history. We got people leaving the nursing profession, leaving education, and a lot of business trajectories and going to different places. And I'll usually ask them, so what's going on? And they go, that young generation, you know, that disloyal, short attention span, career sugar high, that's the driving factor here. And my response to that is, you mean your children that you raised? Like, it's so easy to target the young generation. By the way, have we ever had a generation where we said, God, they work so much harder than we did? You know, what's going on?
They're way better than we are.
Exactly. So I said, no, hang on a second. That young generation that's increasingly infecting the entire workforce sees more opportunity than any time in history, thanks to the transparency the internet has provided. I started my career looking at a newspaper. I'm sure you did too. Like, you know, what's in the classified ads? And it was localized to my town. Okay. I didn't know what was going on, you know, several zip codes away. It just wasn't appearing in my newspaper. And now I can see opportunities everywhere of how I can apply my skills, education, experience in ways I couldn't before. And that's fundamentally causing people to, like, imagine you know, eating pizza your whole life in your grandma's basement. And now you go to Vegas and you go, whoa, I can eat this whole buffet table. I can taste all this new stuff. And we've got a generation and increasingly an entire workforce like, hey, I want to try something new. Like, I want to know what that's like. And so I don't think we can begrudge anyone. And if I ask any executive, do you think in the future people are going to stay longer? Do you think we're just going through a dip, a moment in time? They go, no, I don't think they will. I said, okay, so have you changed your talent strategy to expect people are only going to stay? The median right now in the States is 4 years, but for people around the age of 25, it's two, you know? Are you planning that your staff won't stay as long? And they're like, no, I'm still in organ rejection denial, you know, because my whole architecture of work was built to reward longevity, more vacation, more 401k match, more promotional opportunities. And I'm like, yeah, but you just told me, you know, your people aren't going to stay as long. So how about we shift those dollars to accelerating team building, you know, building a faster knowledge transfer process in your organization, you know, upskilling people. And here's the thing that I think, you know, the loyalty conversation, I think talent is more loyal today than ever before, just not to companies. I think they're loyal to learning, you know, and that's a aspirational loyalty that I think organizations should really stare down, because it's, you know, the conversation I have is, well, why should I train my people, Steve? They're just going to leave. I'm like, well, what if you don't train them and they stay? And they're like, oh yeah.
That would suck.
And so, you know, and let's give people career security, not job security. Let's give them something bigger. Like, I'm going to make you better as long as you're here. And we're starting to see companies do that. Like Chick-fil-A, their career website's got X employees on it. Thank you for helping me become a nurse or a teacher, you know? And then most of us went to the Tony Soprano School of HR, which is what, you quit, you're dead to me, you know? And they don't think about alumni. Well, it turns out in the future, I think we're going to measure a company's vitality, not by how few people left, but how many people came back. Because that's, you know, the grass always looks really green right now. And if you can bring people back, I think that's really, really powerful. So that's, I'm trying to get leaders to think differently about this and to say, listen, you can't stop people from going. It's not because you're not nice. It's not because you don't have a good culture, because there's so much choice right now. And we're not sure how this is going to play out. So you got to be a great place where people are going to learn. And I think then maybe they'll come back. And if they don't, maybe they'll send their friends to you, you know, to work there. So it's a real shifting, you know, dynamic, but nobody I talk to thinks people in the future are going to stay in organizations longer.
Also, well, so well said, Steve, you should probably write a book about this stuff. Speaking of, Steve, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage? And where can they pick up their copy of WorkQuake?
Yeah. Thanks, George, for having me. You can find me on LinkedIn. I hear it's a pretty good website. You can find me on my website, stevecadigan.com. I also have a pretty goofy TikTok channel under my name too, Steve Cadigan. And WorkQuake, you can find anywhere books are sold. You know, we have sold 5X what the normal business book sells. My manager told me today, so I'm walking around a lot taller. And then he's like, when are you writing your next book? I'm like, come on, just let's work this one a little bit longer. But no, I really appreciate the support, and it's been great to be on your show, George.
Yeah. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Steve your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to stevecadigan.com, stevecadigan.com. Check out all things Steve Cadigan. You can find him on LinkedIn and TikTok as well, if you are into that kind of a thing. And then pick up your copy of WorkQuake wherever you buy your books. Thanks again, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.